Welcome to the Addiction Solution Podcast. I'm Michelle Dunbar. Enjoy listening and watching as addiction experts Mark Sheeran and I cover controversial as well as helpful topics on addiction, how to move past it, and other related subjects. As two of the co-founders of the Freedom Model, Mark and I will give you a completely new perspective on the topics that matter to you. We will take to task the Recovery Society's lies and misinformation and replace them with facts, research, and the methods to move on from addiction struggles without 12-step meetings, rehabs, and the shackles of endless recovery. Let's escape the treatment and recovery trap together and learn to be free. Welcome to the truth.
Hey, everybody.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to the Addiction Solution. I'm Michelle Dunbar.
And I'm Mark Sheeran. And we co-wrote with Stephen Slate, our colleague, The Freedom Model for Addictions, Escape the Treatment and Recovery Trap.
Let's tell everybody.
Right here is our app.
Yeah.
That's the QR code for those that are watching on YouTube or wherever. Right there.
You can get, there's sample content, there are videos. You can also get our free downloadable ebooks. That like there's an abridged ebook of the Freedom Model, and then there is an ebook to help families approach someone that they think might be having a problem.
That's right. And now we have our live events where we have our new coaching certification program. That's the Freedom Model Coaching Certification Program. And to learn more about that, we have live events so people can. Some people want to be coaches, or they're not sure if they want to be a coach. They don't know what the opportunities with the Freedom Model are for them. So we created these live events so that you can come in for free, have a Q&A with Michelle and I, and spend an hour going over what are all the opportunities, how to become a coach, what is the training program all about? It's an 8-week training program, how to build a training or a coaching practice. And so all of this stuff is covered. You know, our methodology and all of it in the training. So the live event covers a lot of that.
And to be a coach, you're not going to be working for the Freedom Model. You're going to remain independent. Mm-hmm. So you can incorporate it into a therapy practice you may already have, or a coaching practice you may already have. You just learn the Freedom Model method. You'll have access to all the Freedom Model products. It's pretty tremendous. And you'll also learn at those live events, other ways you can get involved in our movement. So yeah. So we have one every week for the foreseeable future. Go to thefreedommodel.org/live. I think it's live-events.
Yep. It's live-events.
And you'll see the next several that we have coming up. So, all right. What are we going to talk about today? I had a really wonderful coaching session yesterday with a really nice woman, and something came up in it that I don't think we've talked about. I'm not sure in a very long time, if ever, that we've talked about it. And that is, there is, you know, a lot of times when I work with, or both of us work with people, when we're trying to figure out the benefits, trying to figure out why people do what they do, a lot of times they're like, well, I just really love this thing. I really love the pleasure of it. I love wine. And that's why I drink 2 bottles of wine a night. But there is a difference between loving the taste of wine and loving the act of drinking.
Yeah. And so we have to kind of define what Michelle is talking about here. So I'm going to switch gears. We did a podcast not that long ago about how you can actually become driven into behaviors that on the outside are seemingly really terrible, and yet you stay in them.
Right.
And a good example of that is like a really bad abusive marriage where maybe there's violence and things like that going on. And so people say, well, I love this person, and that's why I stay. And I believe that that's true.
I believe that that's true.
But they also get used to defining themselves by the abuse and the drama of it. And in a lot of cases, not all cases, but in a lot of cases, they like the whole package of crazy. And I've I've coached people when it comes to their drinking, where their drinking and their drugging is a complete horror show. And yet they continue to do it.
Yes.
And what happens is they start to identify themselves by pain. They start to actually believe and accept that this is what they're worth and that there's certain benefits to that lifestyle of chaos. And they'll repeat it over and over and over again. So it's a whole package deal. And I think that that's what Michelle is talking about, is this active drinking. So we'll keep it at in that sort of narrow band, the drug taking. We'll just say drinking to make it easy to talk about. But I think it's there can be a lot to that.
There's a lot to that. It gets very confusing, you know, especially when sometimes the benefits that you see in it seem counterintuitive. They seem like, for example, the benefits could be, well, nobody expects me to be responsible.
Yeah.
Where I get to check out. Like people's expectations of me are lowered. That can be a benefit.
Yeah, for sure. I think that when you're in a family that is fully bought into the disease concept and rehabs being your solution, and then they fall into the, oh my God, my son or daughter or husband is diseased and they can't help themselves, it's pretty easy to adopt that whole ethos. Yeah. Because now you have an excuse to drink. So you might have these sort of ancillary benefits of you believe it has stress relief and all of that for your own personal liking. But then you have this other benefit that on the outside seems insane. And that
right.
is, I'm a diseased, broken person that can't take care of themselves.
Or others.
And yeah, and I don't have to take care of my kids anymore. I've given up. And we see this a lot with women that smoke crack or have a heroin problem. They give up their kids and people are like, what's wrong with you? You know what? In a lot of cases, those mothers, when we get down to brass tacks, they don't want to be moms.
No.
And so they use this excuse. So there's this benefit that they see privately in the confines of their mind.
Right. That they'll never admit because there's such judgment against it, which
That's
is
right.
why with the Freedom Model, we talk so much about no judgment. I don't get to decide what's best for you or what you might like in your autonomous mind.
Yeah. So please understand, we're not saying that this is the case with everybody. But there is a group of people, and it's a large one, in the problematic use group, the aggregate, right? The demographic, this huge demographic of people. 10% of the world population at some point is going to have this sort of challenge in their life. A big percentage of them love the rituals. They get to a place. I did this. You get to a place where it's expected that you're going to be a liar, a thief, sort of a fuck up. And I sort of got into that mode. And then I realized, well, I guess I don't have to perform like everybody else. And that was a huge benefit for me at that time. Now, what's crazy is eventually that gets old too.
Sure does.
You know, after a while, now you start to rally. Why do people treat me so badly? You know, and then you get into the self-pity. Then that becomes your identity. Then it's the self-pity that everybody's against you. So there's benefits to all of these patterns. And it's only when you stop, and I think Michelle was talking about this before the podcast, it's when you stop long enough to say, is it possible for me to be happier outside of this entire ritual package?
Well, that's it. I've used the example in my coaching of giving up smoking, right? I was never a smoker per se. When I was young, I was an athlete. And then I went to AA. Everybody smoked. Like smoking meetings, you left smelling like smoke, more so than the bar even. And so I started smoking, and then I kind of went to closet smoking for on and off for a long time. And I never liked cigarettes, really. Like I could say I never really liked cigarettes. The sucking smoke into my lungs felt painful, uncomfortable. It was never that. And when I really stood back and looked at what do I like about this without judgment, it was the entire ritual of it. It was that I kind of felt a little bit like a badass. And then it was also, you kind of feel a little bit sophisticated, because when I grew up, that's Virginia right. Slims commercials.
Yeah,
remember
them? Yeah, that was the marketing.
That was the marketing. Women are sexy. Men are rugged and tough. And so I would play that kind of role. I liked that you could take a break and go outside with other people, and you were part of this club. You know, I liked all of those things kept me doing it. I liked sitting outside with my coffee in the morning, having a cigarette. Like, that felt very adult. I mean, it just, there was all of these things about it that when I really looked at it, I'm like, what am I giving up if I stop? And that's where I always go with people. It's like,
I want people to listen to that. Say that again, because this is a really, this is ingenious what she does.
So when people really struggle to find out what they still like about it, especially when they're in that place where they're like, I hate doing this.
Right.
My question is always, when you go to do it, stop and ask yourself, if I don't do this right now,
what do I lose?
What do I lose? What am I giving up?
And that is one of the most brilliant things, because it immediately identifies
a benefit.
A benefit. You know,
I'm going to give up this time to go outside and get some fresh air. Well, I don't necessarily have to give that up. I can go out and get fresh air without having a cigarette.
Right.
I mean, like, it illuminates that reality of
and then you can challenge it, because you're not going out to get fresh air. What you're doing is you're going out to have a break.
Yes.
And then you go, oh,
maybe I can have a break without it.
Yeah, maybe I can have a break without it. Maybe I don't need this, you know. So when you identify things by, what do I lose by quitting?
Yes.
What do I lose by quitting? And I'm telling you that when Michelle first started doing that, I don't use it as much, but I'm going to start using it more. I'm glad you reminded me of it.
I use it in almost every coaching session.
Freaking smart, man.
Because most of the people that I work with have been through the treatment ringer. They've been through 12-step programs. You are taught not to look at benefits, like, to an extreme. You're taught to ignore all of that because it's irrelevant. It's the most relevant thing. It's the only thing that matters.
That's right. Because your positive drive is pushing all of this along. And you don't, if we don't really look at, why am I in this relationship? Why do I like beer? Why do I like liquor? Why do I like heroin? Why do I like sticking needles in my arm? You know, and if you don't stop long enough and have some technique to figure out what the benefits are, you can't challenge the benefits and change it. Yeah. You know, the only way to change any behavior is to challenge either the validity or the value, the validity value and the value of those choices. And that's brilliant stuff. So smoking is such a great one, because it's so uncomfortable.
Yeah.
It takes a lot of work when you first start smoking, usually as an adolescent, to get good at it and destroy your lungs enough that it takes the smoke.
That you're not choking and gagging when you do it. Right.
Yeah. Your body rebels against poisoning itself. So, and then you dive into this mythology and ritual, this religion of smoking. And they're religions. These are belief systems. And that is, it takes my stress away. It gives me this time to myself. And you don't need a cigarette to do that.
No, not at all.
It's really interesting, you know. Now, bars are filled with people doing that with alcohol. And used to be cigarettes. But the point is they're filled with all kinds of these motives with a prop. So drugs and alcohol are props. They're not doing the things you think they're doing. That's all you in your ritual and in your interpretation of the physical effects of these substances, these poisons. So you take these poisons into your body, these substances, and then you interpret that physical experience and attach a bunch of mental and emotional value to it.
That's it.
And they're props.
Yes.
In your theater. In your ritual theater.
And so let me go back to what I originally said. And what I said to this student the other day was, There is a difference between, like, let's use food, for example, because this is another thing that many of my students struggle with. And that is, have you ever really met, I mean, yes, there are overweight chefs, but if you look at foodies, people that really, really like food and they really get into it, and most of them are not overweight. And the reason is because when you love something, genuinely have an affinity for it, you don't abuse it. You respect it, right? So I do really like wine. And I'm not like smart about wine, and I don't get expensive wine or anything like that. But I like a nice glass of red wine. And I like it with, and I'll drink red wine with chicken. Like, I don't have to pair it or anything like that. But I like it, and I savor it, and I enjoy it. And that's it. Like, I don't love the act of drinking. So, or the act of eating. And I realized when I was using food for things it couldn't do for me, it was about eating, not about the food.
Right. It was a multifaceted fascination.
It was using it as a prop.
Right.
For
all these emotional reasons.
Yes.
So let's make the distinction, the really, really detailed distinction. The food itself is like a substance. It's a physical thing.
That you're ingesting.
And so it has no capacity to give you these emotional accolades.
The comfort foods, right? Yeah. Everybody calls them comfort
foods. What great marketing.
Yes, absolutely.
So we do, in the book, we talk about it. It's all learned connections. You're taking life troubles, fantasies, all these ideas about food, about cigarettes, about substances, about sex, about pornography, about whatever the fetish is. And you're breathing life into it in your mind. And then you attach that meaning to an object. Now, this is important. The object, whether it's pornography pixels on a screen or heroin in your bloodstream, is a thing. It has no sentience. It has no ability to go into your mind. And I say this on a lot of podcasts, but it is the crucial point. When people realize this and really realize it and go, oh my God, you know, all right. So this thing, it's not making me think this way. It's not lowering my inhibitions. It's not making me more sexual. It's not creating an orgasm. It's not doing any of those things. It's giving you a physical sensation, or in the case of pornography or something like that, it's light pixels. Visual stimulus. And then it's just a matter of how do you interpret that experience?
That's it.
That's your religion.
Which happens in your mind.
That's right. So you give it meaning. You are a projector projecting your own meaning into that object, but then you give the object the credit. That's where shit gets weird. That's where the confusion happens because it's not real.
That's where you start to think, I need this. I need this. I need this.
You place the value into the object.
Yes. I read something the other day. I forget where I saw it. It was an article I was reading online or something. And it was about, oh no, it's the book I'm reading. I'm listening to a book, The Comfort Crisis. And I'm not sure I like it yet or not. I some of the stuff I really think is valuable and some of the stuff, but there was something interesting, and it was about the things that we go to for comfort, right? The comfort it gives us is the interpretation that we give it. It's the value we put in it. So you can make anything your comfort, right? Like if you find comfort in ice cream, you can equally find comfort in chicken noodle soup. Like if you find comfort in a glass of wine, you can equally find comfort in a glass of juice or a glass of milk
or a glass of water
Yeah,
people do it all the time.
Yeah. So it really is the value you attach to it and the meaning that you give it. We're not saying that seeking comfort is a bad thing. It's a natural thing. We all do it. But when you continuously go to the same thing, what happens a lot of times, so we build this value in it, but when we start to seek comfort to the exclusion of everything else in our life, it's not comforting anymore.
Right. Right. Yeah. And that's the term misattribution. So when you give the credit to the exactly. object, we're going to call it a fetish object. That's the way in our PMO course, we talk about it as a fetish object, but heroin is no different. It's an object in your bloodstream and it makes your head feel funny. Right. But that's physical. All the interpretation is you. And once you start to interpret it as the only way that you can be happy, all that tells us is that you've taken the marketing of drug cartels and you believed it.
Yeah.
You believed in product marketing.
Yep.
And that's okay. You can believe it, but it's not true. It's not factually correct. What is factually correct is heroin makes my nerve endings numb, essentially.
Yeah, right? Physically.
Physically. And then I interpret that as an emotional experience because I choose to do that. And when you understand that, you can ask yourself, do I want to continue to give credit to the heroin for something I'm doing? Or do I want to take responsibility and say, maybe I don't want to give a lot of my time and money into something that isn't actually doing.
That isn't actually providing me this benefit.
Yeah. I mean, if it's me all along. Now, you can also say, I like the physical sensation, which you probably do if you do it a lot. I like the physical sensation. But if I take away my interpretation that it takes care of my stress and my bills and all, and it's a warm emotional blanket.
It's my escape.
Right. It's my escape. And I separate that out. And I put that over here because it's not factually correct. Then what are you left with? You're left with a drug experience, a substance object in your bloodstream that makes your nerves numb physically. Nothing more, nothing less. We're not saying that it can't kill you if you take enough of that substance in your body, like alcohol or any drug or any substance for that matter. Water, you can kill yourself with water, by the way.
Yeah.
If you take enough of it, you know, is that experience really important to me physically? And then you kind of go, it's kind of lame. You know, I don't like feeling numb all the time and nodding out and feeling stupid and like I can't process well. That's not that exciting. Slow. But if I attach the marketing speak and I start to experience that as my escape, then you create your escape. Then the question is, maybe if I separate out the other direction, let me take the substance and toss that out. And then I say, how can I escape? Because human beings like to escape.
Yeah, for sure.
Now, you can't escape from yourself. It's impossible. Your mind is always running. So the question is, how do I divert my attention to things that are less stressful? Because that's really what this is all about. That's what a vacation is.
Yeah.
You know, and can I do it in other ways that are more productive?
There are infinite ways to do that. There are infinite ways. And we've had people ask us a lot online about how, if you find something pleasurable, how can you find it not pleasurable? We have never once said that you have to find something not pleasurable to stop an addiction. We've never once said that. But Mark is right. Your pleasure is amplified by the value and meaning you give it and the interpretive value that you give it, right? So when drinking a glass of wine goes from just being, it tastes good. Most of the time I have one glass. So I don't feel honestly anything other than I like the taste. And yeah, if I have two glasses with dinner, I'll feel a little bit fuzzy. And I do enjoy that feeling. I do like that, but I don't imbue that with making me think that I'm escaping anything.
That's the point. That's the point. I love opiates. I love the sensation, the numbing effect, and the slowed neural functioning of opiates.
I know a lot of people hate it.
I really love it. But I also am a realist where I'm like,
it's not doing anything more for you.
Yeah.
Part of the reason you love it is because it takes away pain.
Yeah. Yeah.
Physical pain.
So I take it for physical pain and then I do enjoy the slowing of my brain processing power. Right. But here's what's interesting. pot kind of does the same thing to me, but because the physical sensation is different, I can't stand it. It's like a buzzy, weird.
And I don't mind it.
Right. And a lot of people like that. So, but by not attributing the next level of horse shit into it, which is that it's going to make me emotionally better, that somehow it has the capacity to go into my mind and change my human experience. That's where the marketing, I can't buy in because I know it's bullshit. So once you understand that you're being played, it's very hard to enjoy opiates or anything the same way. It's really tough.
And that's where we go into the Santa Claus analogy, right? When you know that you're the magic, then it's easy not to do it. It becomes, you know, now that I know, I mean, there was a period of time in my life when I genuinely thought I escaped when I would get hammered, when I would get drunk and high, so high that I didn't really know where I was and I would black out. Like, I genuinely thought somehow I was escaping. But when I looked at it realistically and my crazy antics in those states, I wasn't escaping anything. I was creating a world of chaos. And so when the illusion was completely busted, there is literally nothing, no value I see in being intoxicated anymore.
Yeah. Then it requires, if you're an experimenter with substances like we've been our whole lives, really, because this is what we do all day is think about this shit. You know, then you like in my case, with the opiates, a great example. So I take opiates only when I have pain or something like that. And because I know that it's not going into the metaphysical realm and is a warm blanket for my emotions or any of that bullshit, I enjoy the lack of pain. And then I might allow myself to go into a fantasy realm while I am dealing with whatever the pain is. I mean, I take opiates once every 10 years or something now, because it's only when I like break an ankle or some shit.
Or throw out my back
in a massive way or something. I don't even take it if I live in chronic pain and I still don't use it. Just because in the end, it's not that exciting.
No,
I have to actually work at creating a fantasy at this point, because I know full well that it's not changing my mind for me.
Right.
So once you know that, it's interesting. So I'm going to use an analogy that I use in coaching. When I'm coaching people, they're going through this process of trying to figure out mind, brain, body, experience, stimulus, all these things that we're talking about, because they're completely confused on all these factors. And I say the best way to explain it in an analogy is you're the director of a play. The play is life, but you are the director of your play.
Make no mistake.
Like, I am the director right now of my experience. And then let's say this was filled with whiskey. This is a prop. It's a prop that has meaning to me personally. Now, I may have taken in information about whiskey, let's say, when I was 18, that it makes me fight better. It makes me have sex better. It makes me more outgoing. It makes me have the ability to be more social. And so this prop, when I drink it, right, I take a sip, I feel the heat. I feel the numbness in my skin as alcohol, as acetaldehyde, it poisons my body. And as that poisoning is happening, that's a prop that I've used to now say, I get to go have courage and fight. I get to go have courage and talk to that girl. I'm directing a play.
All right.
I'm directing a play. This is just a prop. The poisoning is a prop. It's an experience, just like I might experience the other actors in the play, you know, at 18 in my basement bedroom and some place in Florida, some bar I was at or wherever. These are all plays, and I'm projecting meaning into the play all the time. Now, that's what human beings do every day of their lives. They're projecting, like a giant projector, the meaning of everything in their existence. And so these are just props. They don't actually make you different or make you do things, because they don't have sentience. The only thing that has sentience or the ability to have consciousness is you. There's only you and you. So when you get this and you realize, oh, I'm making a play with props, and people are the actors around me, and they have their own agendas.
That's right.
Some come in conflict with my play. Some come in harmony. Some are neutral. And we're just moving around in this giant play called life. And this prop, when you see it as a prop that you're manipulating for your own ends, then you will realize it's a small piece of the play. And it will get smaller and smaller and smaller and less meaningful as other things become bigger and more important to you. And that's the nature of outgrowing addiction. That's it. That's the play analogy. And when I do that with people, they go, holy fuck. I get it. I get it. For the first time, I get it. You know? So that's the value of coaching, by the way.
It is. It is. So we kind of did like a little coaching session today. Yeah. And I hope that you found this helpful. And I know this is going to be released right before Labor Day weekend here in the US. So I hope everybody has a happy and safe holiday weekend and really, yeah, really enjoys themselves.
So if you really do want to get involved in the Freedom Model movement, the global movement, we want you to be a coach. We want you to be an affiliate. We want you to have the opportunity to be a part of the organization. And come to one of our live events. That's thefreedommodel.org/live-events.
Yes.
So write that down or just go to the coaching certification tab and you can find your way through there.
Yes. And look it, if I want to say this, and we say this every podcast, but I have to keep saying it because people keep asking these questions online. If you've read the book, I had somebody just say, I've read the book four times and I'm still struggling. There's something I'm missing. If you haven't gotten the workshop, get the workshop.
Yes.
Either the Solution to Addiction workshop if you're struggling with substance use, or the Solution to PMO and Sex Addiction workshop if you're struggling yes. with porn, any kind of sex addiction, or really any kind of behavioral addiction, because you can substitute behaviors. It's all the same thing with behaviors. There's value you see in it, value you place in it within your own mind that you need to identify and challenge if you want to be able to feel like you're back in control of what you're doing. You are in control. It's important to know.
You're in control of a bunch of misinformation, which has you confused.
Yeah. Yeah. If you believe you're not, then that is the way you're in control, is you've kind of believe you're not, if that makes sense. Right. So, and if you've gotten the workshop and you're still struggling, then it's time to call us and set up a coaching session.
For sure. For sure. So but what the workshop is essentially an addendum as we, I wanted to explain this too, just really brief. So when it comes to research, we write a book, we vet that book over a series of years, we figure out what parts work, what parts are not correct, and then we publish when we're satisfied with it. So this, we're very satisfied with.
Yeah, because it took 27 years to publish that.
Exactly. So then people say, well, what about the newest research? Well, what we do is we then create workshops, and with the workshops, there's addendums, there's additional material. There's
and it's another- easy to change a workshop. This went through a lot of the publisher. Once you publish something for real, you can't change it. Once it's published, you have to make a revision and then go through the whole publishing process again. But with a workshop and the books we have in the workshops, they're easy for us to update.
That's right. And so we know now, we published 7 years ago, this book, we know that there's about 50% of people that read the book solve their problem. And then there's this other 50% that needs workshops, videos, the online program, and maybe coaching. But it's what we did is we created this system of products that's low cost. So you can figure out what is the avenue that's best for me. So, and the best starting point after the book, or even before the book, is the workshop, because it'll frame out.
Yeah, if you're not going to read a book, if you're just not going to sit down and read a book or listen to a full book,
get the workshop.
The workshop is 2 hours. The video is 2 hours long. The book itself is like 50 pages. With the Solution to Addiction workshop, there's a workbook as well. With the PMO workshop, there's our Solution to PMO and Sex Addiction
book.
That it kind of has its own question workbook type style stuff within it. So those books are only available with the workshop. And we also have the online program. So to find the online program and our 12-step deprogramming course, you can find them through the app, but you can also find them at the bottom of our coaching page. Our free masterclass is there too. That's a great place to start
Yeah, there's so many resources. The online program, I think, is the greatest resource of all. If you're the type of person that's a YouTuber and you really learn through video and that's how you learned and you're younger, that's a real common thing nowadays. The online program may be exactly what you need. And that's membership based. You buy it and then you can re-up each month. And it's got over 170 video tutorials on every topic in that book and more.
Yeah. So you can get, there's one price for the first month. And then for each additional month, there's a small subscription fee. And it includes, you can talk with us once a month at the last Wednesday
for 2 hours.
For up to 2 hours. You can ask us every question you want. It's tremendous. So it's kind of like at the end of every month, you have a coaching session that's included with
it's
that
free.
Price. Yeah. Yeah. It's basically $50 a month.
Yeah. Yeah.
To talk with
us. That's a good point.
Yeah. Yep. So yeah. I hope you all have a great weekend, and we'll see you in a couple weeks.
See you in a couple weeks. Bye.